This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thanks for joining us today. Once again, our special guest is Charles Kerridge. What about the existing loan base that's in place? You know, all these 2%, 3%, 4% loans. Do you have sellers willing to say, I'll leave my loan in place? Anybody knowledgeable enough to even contemplate that?
Oh, I think a lot of people are thinking about that, that it doesn't make sense to break out of their 2% or 3% once in a lifetime, perhaps, loan to transfer and trade out. I think most of what the looks are that we're most of the people that are moving right now, at least for what I'm seeing, a large part of it is people moving out of state, taking their equity and moving. And for them, they don't even have to take a loan out because they're selling for 2x and buying it 1x wherever their state is that they're going to. Yep. I see a lot of that movement. You and I talked about this before, Bruce. I think it's going to cement in low inventories, relatively speaking, because I think people are going to think twice about getting out of a 3% or 2-point-something loan to jump into a 6% loan, unless they can just move with cash and not have to worry about financing.
Yeah, I really think that will be true. But I did some calculation today. You know, I'm writing this new report, and I've interviewed Christopher Thornburg yesterday. And I've been reading about the interest rate spreads that are normal and where we're at. And it's not inconceivable we could have double-digit interest rates.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, we haven't seen, are you talking about double-digit 30-year fixed interest rate? Yeah, we haven't seen those since about, it was about 87 or 88 was the last time we had double-digit. We wish that it was single-digit interest rates. Wow.
Well, I mean, what is an interest rate today? I just thought I saw a chart that literally in the last 5 days, it's moved up a whole percentage point.
That's right. I think we're about 6% or hovering real close to a little over 6 right now.
Right. So you're at 6% and what's your 10-year T-bill? Is it 3?
Yeah, it's a little over 3. I think yesterday was about 3.03 or something like that.
Okay. So you're borrowing money at 6 and your inflation rate is 9. That isn't a normal number.
Right.
So, yeah. So I worked out the math of some of that because I always write the last chapter last. I don't make any conclusions until I, paint the picture pretty clear for myself. So that's very interesting. You know, we definitely have some challenges in the next year or two. So, and the Fed, I'm trying to understand the Fed's buying of assets and how they get rid of them. Are you familiar with that?
No, not really.
Yeah. See, that's, I know that's have been very helpful when the Fed's been basically the backing of the mortgage. You know, they've been owning the mortgages at those crazy low rates. Well, I'm not sure when they exit who they sell those to or how they do that. And how that changes the market. But I think it's really going to be interesting because the conclusions of the report are definitely going to have to say this could go in 3 different directions, and kind of say, here's the conclusion. If the Fed gets weary of getting screamed out because recession is now occurring and you're still raising rates, okay, that would probably be received really poorly, and that could happen very quickly. So we'll see. But at any rate, we had a meeting with I talked about this personally. We had a meeting with Fannie Mae's CEO last year at his office, and the discussion was, you got to find a way to let these mortgages in place go forward. I mean, how safe would that be? You'd have people, like you say, you can't even have an REO because the equity position is so great on these mortgages. Well, what's the problem letting someone take that over that means they're going to have a down payment of what, 40%? Your loan's in no danger, but you're going to have a realtor make a living. Think about how little volume is going to occur for mortgage lenders and for agents with the current policy of you have to get a new loan.
Well, the refi market is completely gone. So
yeah,
these lenders that were booming are now famishing. That entire refi market is gone. Bruce, do you think their goal is to raise rates fast so they can lower them quickly?
Well, it doesn't appear that they're raising them fast. There's no way. If you look at where they should be, they're not even close. I think, you know what, you look back and go, wow, kind of wish they had raised rates earlier, because we got that extra 12 months of astonishing growth in price that really wasn't warranted, wasn't needed. And it put the affordability number in the inflation of the 70s, 74 to 80, we had interest rates go from 7.5 to 15, and guys' wages, everybody's wages doubled during that cycle. But the reason that it lasted so long of an upside, because prices tripled, that was possible because we started with a 45% affordability number. So it took 7 years to get it to 17. This time we accomplished that in 4 months.
Wow. Wow.
So they had very few raises of interest rates, and we were at the max payment historically that we get to. And by the way, you know, what's interesting about that, normally, and now we have been euphoric. Wouldn't you say last year was a euphoric market when you put something on for sale and you got 10 cash offers and the price went up?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's the only way you get to 17% affordability is euphoria. Okay. So let's think out loud. So let's say you know, Jerome Powell calls up and said, you know what, I've really made a mistake. Let's go back to a Fed fund rate of 1%, and tomorrow morning interest rates on mortgages are 3%. Do you still have the urgency in place, or is that gone?
Oh, good question. That's a hard one, really. That's such a quick turnaround. I don't know if they magically wake up the next day and say, yay. I know you and I talked about this, and you're saying, no, it takes a long period of time for it to change back again for the mood of the buyer. My question is, and I do not like the word transitory because they overused it and said that about inflation, but I'm going to use it in a different venue. These high prices, are they so transitory that people aren't even really aware and now they go back down? For example, talking to Uncle Ray in San Francisco, he's saying that their prices have dropped about 10 or 12%. And if you just only had gains, say, for a year that were not normal, and then they come back bouncing down, do you think that creates a lot of damage to the buyers in their minds or to the sellers as well? Because it was only a little window. And if it bounces back to where it becomes enticing for a seller and a buyer to move forward, these high prices haven't lasted a long time so far as this last stretch.
No, because the last stretch was pretty artificial.
Right.
I mean, they were on the backs of mortgage rates. So you could have a 20% price increase and not change your monthly payment a dollar.
Right.
So yeah, that whole gain was manufactured by policy.
Right.
So yeah, that's part of the calculation of saying, okay, this is what the damage path might be, is there'll be an assumption of, first of all, where's the inventory going to come from? Because if it's not going to come from lender-owned properties being sold, you know, that revert to a lender, which I think they're going to be very far and few between, then you look to the builders. Okay, so the builders, are they going to have massive inventory? Are they building massive tracts that they're going to be auctioning off because they didn't sell? There's no way. A matter of fact, now they have an all cash buyer that's ready to buy the whole tract. So where's that inventory going to go? I don't think it's going to get in trouble. So you have now the existing base of homes that's for sale. And okay, you got a mortgage that starts with a 2 or a 3. You're going to sign up for one that's a 6. It would have to be an urgent situation. I lost my job in California and I've got a new job in Missouri. I mean, that type of thing.
Right. No, I agree. I think the only cup that could be increased with the inventory are not the banker builder right now. It's the traditional sellers. And just to your point, are they going to want to give up their 2 or 3% loan for 6%? And only if they have to, or only if they don't need it going forward. In other words, let's say they have 50% equity in their home here with the 2%. They can go to Missouri and pay cash.
That's right.
It doesn't matter if rates are 12% and still have money left over.
Yeah.
But you mentioned to me, tell me what percent our market is out of state buyers. I mean, out of state sellers.
People that are selling and leave California. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Of our total seller makeup of traditional sellers, what percent are actually moving out of state?
It's a little over 30%.
One third of our market.
Yeah. But that's actually not unusual for California. You'll range probably from 25 to 30% if you go back a long time.
Right.
So what's interesting now is you're actually losing so much migration over immigration. So you're really losing buyers, but you know what? You haven't built anything. So that's the other thing. Usually peak market. So let's say euphoria is at 17% affordability. Look at how many homes were constructed in 80, 89, 05, 150, 160,000. Last year, 60,000.
Wow.
And it wasn't more than that the last, say, 8 years before that, where in the other years it was. It was 160 at the peak and 140 last year before that and 135 and so forth. So you've got really a million homes in this last cycle that were not built in California.
Wow.
So you don't have an abundance of inventory that's going to auction tomorrow from the builders. That is not going to occur. And that's why you have all these needs for, okay, how do we do an ADU attached to something that you own? Because we kind of need the space. So it's really an unusual market. Florida's going to be interesting to play with these statistics, because there you have a lot of cash buyers, and intentionally, you know, where I'm speccing houses, we did a lot of research as to where the margin is. You know, what can we build that has the most margin as far as when we're doing a sale on a resale? And so the margin exists when you have a pool, when you have a lanai that's covered, and you have a third car garage. You know, it's basically you double your profit by having those things. And your percentage of cash buyers is much higher in that price range than it is on your starter home. So that inventory has got the migration of people coming from New York, New Jersey, and Canada wanting those amenities and having sold something that sold for twice as much as what they're buying from you. So that's the safeguard in Florida. You know, there's a lot of that. So it's just going to be a really interesting time. I think the one chart that you can pretty much say that's going to get killed is the volume of sales. If they do not let the interest rates that are in place go forward, and I hope they do. I hope there's some power to be that says, you know what, we're overriding this because it's healthy for the country and not in any danger of the lender. What if you did, you know, you made an interesting comment that the people that are buying now are willingly signing up for a 7-1. Okay, so transfer the loan and make it a 7-1. So now the lender's not on the hook for the whole time.
Right.
Interest rates enough to entice the sale, and the broker actually makes a living. Because if you don't do that, I mean, how many brokers are going to be around if the volume is 50% or less of what it is?
That's right. No, there's going to be a lot of people leaving the industry for sure.
Yeah. That seems to be almost a certainty. It's just interesting. Some of the things, you know, we've been able to go back to Washington a few times, and one of them, I suggested they have a nothing down loan program in about 2010 to get people into homes and have one foreclosure law nationally. You're 6 months delinquent. Okay. The opening bid's a late payment. So you have no REO danger. You know, going back, can you imagine how many lives people, how many lives that would have changed for families?
Oh my gosh, that would solve the whole foreclosure market. Absolutely. That would be an incredible program.
I think it would have solved our like the have and have not program too, or problem too. You'd had so many people now with equity and a payment that's not even close to rent, and they'd have equity and they could be entrepreneurial and they could see that side of the world, you know.
We just missed
a big chance. We sold all those homes to Wall Street for 20 cents on the dollar. And I was in some of those meetings where, you know, we were offered $1 billion to spend for them. And I said, nah, just not my thing. Don't want to do that.
Right. No, I didn't want to participate in helping with that either. I really didn't. I felt like they were moving into our market just to capitalize as quickly as they could and then exit out once another asset class was more favorable. But it was the asset class du jour of the moment.
Yeah.
With a vengeance.
Yeah, that was the existing homes, and now it's new homes.
Mm.
You know? So, you know, John Burns is really involved in that. You know, he's probably the lead consultant for Wall Street companies that want to own rentals, that's for sure. So it'll be really interesting at the I Survived event when he's on the panel, because that's certainly part of the demand that is in place. Are you getting called about people buying your inventory?
Well, we do get calls a lot, texts and emails quite a bit. I think it's more not from the institutional buyers, maybe more smaller investor buyers, but
I'm getting calls for we want to buy all of your stuff.
Oh, wow. Oh, the entire pool.
Okay. Yeah. Cause it's newer stuff. Matter of fact, you have to have 10 or more for them or to be interested. But if you have that product, yeah, they're very interested. I get called every other day. It's crazy.
Wow. They just want to buy the entire pool of homes you have that are new.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, okay. But that's a backstop, right? The problem.
That's right.
And that's a new buyer. That wasn't prevalent in 2008 and 2009.
No, we didn't have that at all.
Right. So that's the new toy. It's not the existing home that's an REO. It's the new home that John Burns said something to me that I didn't even realize could be possible, but some of these Wall Street companies have arranged financing that's very cheap for a while yet, like years still. Mm. So they have a big advantage of what they're paying versus the rate that we're seeing.
So they're still getting really low interest rates to finance their pools.
Yep. Yeah. So that's, you know, that's a big advantage in the marketplace, and certainly it would entice them to make use of that money that's so cheap.
Right. Are you saying our interest rate for 30-year fixed should be a lot higher than it is with our 10-year treasury at 3%?
No, the 10-year T-bill has no business being at 3%.
So the 10-year should be a lot higher than 3% is what you're saying.
Well, yeah, if you look historically with an inflation rate at 9, it shouldn't be under 9.
Wow.
But it doesn't mean that it's going to be anywhere close to that. But it's there's some formula that I've looked at today a number of times, and you're just going, holy cow, the differential between like the historical chart going back to when the inflation was in the 70s, we're at a record differential of where we have been before. So the interest rates are so much lower than, it's like we're really not fighting inflation for real yet. It's still transitory in somebody's mind.
What's the normal spread?
It almost doesn't exist, but many times it's over the inflation rate.
Wow. So the 10 years normally higher than the inflation rate.
I want to make sure I think of this. No, the mortgage rate can be higher than the inflation rate.
Wow. Wow.
the 10-year T-bill is less than the mortgage rate, right?
Right.
Right. So I would say the mortgage rate, well, just think about when the inflation in the 80s, you had mortgage rates. I borrowed money at 17%.
Right.
So I don't think inflation was that high. I think it was certainly in 12 or so, maybe even 14 or something.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
So we have an interest rate that's still really interesting. So, you know, this is out of my league to say there's a time attached to it where this is going to change radically, but there's no history. There is actually, that's one thing that always, when I look at charts, is have we ever been here before? And the answer is no.
Wow. That's why you said we really should probably be at a double digit 30-year fixed right now.
When I heard that from the gentleman that I interviewed yesterday, I took it seriously because he's no joke as far as he's got a really good head on his shoulders and really understands the history of things. So when he said that, I started unpacking all that and going, wow, that's a possibility.
That was Chris saying that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You should listen to that interview because that was pretty interesting. Because he also thinks that, I don't think he thinks that's going to create a lot of damage. And that was, you know, didn't get into the math of that too much, but I think it comes from the same idea that who's going to sell their house with a 3% mortgage and go sign up for a 10. It has to be an urgent situation. Okay. Well, that'll be some percentage of the market, but it's not going to be a dominant player.
So we basically freeze our market. Maybe the only sales really will be traditional sellers moving out of state. And then with the shifting demographics and the aging of our population, maybe the trust in probate homes where the people, the elderly, their parents passed, and now the family's selling those homes. So there'll be older homes that maybe are in good, solid, strong neighborhoods that will be sold and transferred down that maybe were held in the family for 30 or 40 years. And now those are being freed up to be sold.
Yeah. And cash buyers.
Right.
So yeah, I could see you could still have a 50% of the market as far as number, but then there's a reverse problem. So I was just working on this chapter. I'm thinking all this out. So right now, the latest numbers that came from Carr is you've gone from 430,000 sales here to 380.
Wow.
That's not a big deal, but the trajectory is going to occur more. So let's say you get to 50% of the sales, 200,000 sales. Well, now the other problem becomes bigger. Okay, so you automatically have double the months of inventory if you're selling half the homes, right?
Right.
Doesn't have to change the number of houses for sale. It just changes how many months you have. But it also changes the percentage of foreclosures that do ultimately show up as a percentage of what's for sale. And that's a very dangerous number. So I don't think that's going to happen this cycle, but the lower sales go, the higher percentage, all that other negative stuff becomes a percentage of.
Right. That makes sense.
It's funny.
You've got a lot to wrap your arms around for your report, that's for sure. And things you mentioned have never occurred before. It'll be really interesting to see.
Well, see, that's the math. The math function of it is just one part of it. We kind of have four chapters at the end, and they go, okay, you're not out of the woods yet. And then the next chapter is, there's still more woods. And wow. So every time you think, okay, that's it, right? No. And wow. So you're contemplating something that's why I asked you, if you go back to a 3% mortgage tomorrow after 4 months of it changing, you don't have the willingness of that buyer to pay the same payment. It's gone. You don't have 10 offers just because that happens. So you can do the math equation and say, okay, here we're back to this, but historically, and that's what I was telling you, that affordability number isn't visited only in euphoria, and it's visited 80, 89, 05, and 2022. So a very long time period.
Do you know what the current affordability number is right now?
The last, and it's unfortunately, it's been the wrong quarter to have no information, but I would say it's got to be 17 or less. It was 24 when interest rates were 3 and change.
Right, right. Yeah, 24, right. Yeah, I'm sure it's probably below 17% right now.
Well, see, if that's true, then there's no history of it staying there in a legitimate lending world.
And what's your experience as far as once it hits 17%, how long until the market completely changes? How long does it stay strong before it goes bad once it hits 17%?
Well, that's one of the problems for this market, is that every other time you have that happen, you get relief by interest rates going down. So the uncharted territory part is, uh-oh, that's not what you have. So right. you've ended the cycle at a price per month that is the max, and now you're going to raise interest rates and at the same time lower your buying mood toward the product. Never happened before. So what's the math of that? And it's not pleasant. It is not pleasant. So we're doing the matrix of that right now. So we have what I call the moodometer. That's something that we created.
Right.
If that's all you ever had in real estate, you would know approximately when to be an exiter of property and a buyer of property. It's that clear, and it's repetitive. So there's only a few times we've ever breached the 60%+ of a median income being the PI payment. Okay. So that's happened just now, but at the bottom, you're at about 28% of that, but that's not normal either. So those are, I hate real estate or I love real estate.
Right.
But so now you can do, we play with the math. So that's literally what we started today. So let's take the price right now is 868,000 or something like that, median price. And what we do is we feed into it an interest rate. Let's say it's 6, and then it's 7, and then at 8, 9, and 10. And you have to replicate that same payment. Okay. Well, it doesn't fit past 6. So that's okay. So it has to come out of the price equation. But now let's say you can't end up at 60% mood, right?
Right.
So now you have a double whammy. Your interest rate hike is taking away your capacity to pay that number, but your mood isn't to pay for it anyway. And so, yeah, the math of that, I haven't done all the charts yet, but I can see that that is much, much more aggressive price declines that are possible if you have a lot of people having to sell. You know, okay, and how does that occur? Well, you'd have to have a fair amount of people lose their job and say, I got no choice, you know?
Right.
So yeah, Uncharted. Yeah. It's a perfect title. I didn't want to do Crash 2 because I didn't even think of that being a possibility. I still don't think that, but I think we ought to take a look at that math and go, holy cow, that's scary. Some of those numbers are scary.
Right. I saw, I think it was Sean O'Toole or no, maybe it was him in September last year. And he was thinking that California is going to be strong for another 10 years, but this was before we had all the doubling of interest rates and everything else. So very interesting.
Yeah. He's going to be on the panel at the Nixon Library too. You know, How in the world could you predict that we were going to have the cheapest rates go a year long and add 25%? Remember, I mean, the report that I wrote at the end of 2019 was looking at the best set of charts ever with Cal Poly Pomona appraises about 1,000 or 2,000 homes every quarter, the same house. 25% of those were already going upside down negative in 2019 at the fourth quarter. With no foreclosures. I mean, none of the normal stuff damaging price, and affordability still very high. So you look at that and go, wow, if we are not going up in price with that set of charts, then we probably will have a downturn, which is what I said. Then the pandemic changed the urgency of everything. It changed the urgency to buy something, to move where you felt safer, to put your home office in, and prices exploded. But all that cash, I don't know if you and I talked about this, but I have a really good friend that bought a 60-foot yacht, and he said the one sentence I've never heard in my life, he said, I could sell my boat for a profit. That's when you know something's wrong, man.
Crazy anomalies. Absolutely. And you're right. I bring myself back to the fourth quarter of 2019. We had one property right off the main area where open house that we did would have just flourished with buyer activity, and are in a great, pristine area. And we'd have nobody come through. And I'm not talking when I say two or I'm talking days where we did it on the weekend, not one person came through. Right. And nothing had really changed other than, and there wasn't any inventory really spike ups. There was still the low inventory, but the demand, I don't know where it went. It just kind of disappeared. And then here comes COVID and all the anomalies with it.
I remember you and I talking at that time. Yeah. That's right. Yes. It was part of what, you know, part of me thinking, okay, wow, if you can't sell a decent home with that kind of exposure, and, you know, when you already know the market well enough to say this is the price, that was definitely an influence where you think, okay, I'm having the same feeling with the stuff that we're flipping. You know, the reaction of the market is telling me this isn't going up anymore. There's not enough demand for that to occur. So, but, and now we pegged ourselves to the peak payment at an interest rate. We were fortunate that the interest rate that got us there was really 5%. Anything past 5%, you start having an affordability problem below 17, I would say, or a mudometer payment problem and so forth. And so you go, okay, that's got to come out of somewhere, or the sale doesn't happen. So that's the thing. Okay, so you're going to have sales happen, but it'll be without financing, or it'll be from somebody that's selling an asset that they can go somewhere else and buy it for cash. So, but that it'll be interesting. I haven't even written the last chapter yet. We just started playing with the numbers right before I was talking to you. I looked at the numbers for the first time and went, oh, that's not good.
Yeah, it's the scenario, the worst case scenario that you painted. You said, I sure hope we don't get these sky high prices with a real high interest rate on its increased on an increase. And if we do, and we're painted into a corner, it's not going to be good. And that's where we're at right now. High prices and interest rates going up and up and up.
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely where we're at. And the damage path, see, okay, you know, again, this will all be in the seminar booklet, but there's stuff, the feds, it's not just the lowering of interest rates, it's the accumulation of assets they've never owned. They've never owned mortgages. That's not typically what they do. They do overnight lending, right, to lenders. They just haven't been the buyer of mortgages. And now all of a sudden they're going to be the seller of that stuff and maybe unwind almost a $9 trillion pile of stuff they have. Well, that's not received well either.
Well, doesn't all that stay in the bowels of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac?
No, I don't think so. That's a good question. I'll ask Doug Duncan, but no, I think that's the Federal Reserve has now bought those.
Wow.
Because I recall the times that I was back there at Washington, D.C., they were talking about it was part of their mandate. They had to get rid of ownership of mortgages.
Wow. Well, I think what they need, Bruce, are some excellent guidance and some programs that you've mentioned to them before that could really and a simple stroke fix a lot of the complexity of where we're at and stabilize the home ownership and help home ownership for our country to benefit not only the seller, but the buyer, and is also the lender, and really strengthen our country. And you have some great ideas. And I think that would be amazing for the GSEs to adopt.
Yeah. I don't know who's the, you know, we got one of the top guys that has given us inroads to, you know, have lunch with the CEO. So if you can't have a conversation, it seems like that's the top of the heap, right? How about doing this? It seems like it ought to be able to go from there to see if it could be a policy change. But at the time, there wasn't any urgency, but now there is.
Right. Well, next time you go up there, I'd love to go with you. Any way I could help, I'd love to go up there with you.
Yeah, you know, as John Burns is, I'm sure, had a chance to do some of those conversations, I would hope. I mean, because he's a bright man that has a lot of influence and a lot of clients that, that wouldn't be a bad idea to have a small consortium of very experienced people with different, you know, like you've come from the realtor world, investor world, John Burns is the builder world, and the, you know, that type of thing. It would probably be a good brain trust to have them have a sit down and say, okay, what can we do? What do we need to do?
That's right. And we've dealt with a lot of the GSEs and seen the good and the other parts that can greatly be improved. So yeah. And with your ideas, and I think it would really benefit the whole financial mortgage market world for the better.
Well, it's always funny when I go up there, because I'm always talking to a PhD and I have a high school diploma, you know. I've gotten over that, but it is funny that does occur to me once in a while. It's just like,
oh, well, you know what? I believe you've been put where you're supposed to be, and it's part of your calling. And I think God's put you in these places where you're supposed to be. I've been surrounded in places myself with PhDs and treasurers of the United States wondering, why am I here? I'm not supposed to be here, but
here I am.
So that's favor. That's good. That's very good.
All right, Charles, I guess we better wrap it up. I always enjoy talking to you, man.
All right, Bruce. So good to see you. Joey in the background. Thank you. Bye, you guys.
Okay.
Right, take care.
See you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.
The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE License 01219911, Florida Mortgage Lender License 1577, and NMLS License 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the Hard Money tab.